This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 26th of May, 2023. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. And may I introduce our readers for this week, Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter for this week, Peter Lydiard. So we'll begin with our usual regular notices. The first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 86 1229. 01962 86 1229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to your memory stick. Now, as you listen, please remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And those of you with computers or tablets, apart from using the memory stick in the box provided, you can load it onto your own device. And you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go onto the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent on the list first. And now there is a podcast of our recording, which you will find on the Hampshire Chronicle website. Now we will start off with our headline stories. And the first is from Richard. And it's headed, Demolition Plan, Utter Disgrace.
City councillors have approved the demolition of a landmark building in Winchester city centre. The derelict Friarsgate Medical Centre will be replaced by an open space as a, quotes, meanwhile use, as part of the larger £100 million plus Central Winchester Regeneration Scheme, CWR, which has been hit by several false starts over the years. Winchester City Council's Planning Committee unanimously agreed the proposal on Wednesday, May the 24th. The 1960s building has been empty since 2014. There were calls for housing to be built on the site. Former City Councillor Ian Tate, now a planning consultant, spoke in objection. He said, "I object to this in the strongest possible terms. This is an utter disgrace. Winchester residents want action. I have vigorously argued that this part of the CWR scheme should be brought forward, which would mean there will be no need for a meanwhile use. It deserves a landmark building. Please refuse this and demand that a scheme comes forward for housing on the site." Richard Baker from the City of Winchester Trust said, "The proposed interim use could exist for many years. The Trust questions whether the effort and investment in this interim proposal in this location is going to be worthwhile. Now that a development partner has been selected by the Council, all effort and money should now be directed to securing an agreed final adopted regeneration scheme." Winchester City Council's project manager, Stuart Pegham, said that the meanwhile use would be for between 18 months and 2 years. He said, "The existing building is really not suitable for regeneration. It's in a very poor state. We've been through very extensive design work to create a public interim space." The committee was pleased that the work to demolish the building would improve the area. Councillor Brian Lumming said, "This appears to be a very worthwhile exercise. This has been a blot on the city for a number of years." The committee unanimously agreed the proposal.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah, please.
And this article is headed, Hundreds Have Say on Bushfield Plan. The public have had another chance to have a say on a major redevelopment near Winchester. The developers of Bushfield Camp held another consultation last Friday and Saturday, which attracted around 240 people to the Cathedral Refectory and Badger Farm Community Centre. The landowner, the Church Commissioners, with developer Legal and General Investment Management and Gisborne, is proposing a business park on the footprint of the Army base. The principle has already been conceded, with the former Army base earmarked for business use for 10 years in the local plan. Most of the site would be retained as open space and managed to enhance its chalk downland. Bushfield Camp has been unused since the Ministry of Defence vacated the site on the south of Badger Farm in the 1970s. A planning application is expected in the summer. Legal and General's Ben Rogers said, "Our proposals for Bushfield seek a long-term relationship with Winchester City Council and the community, putting sustainability, green transport, open space and well-being at the core of its ethos. Bushfield will future-proof Winchester's employment opportunities for years to come and provide space to stem the current drain of highly skilled and educated workforces to other cities and communities. The master plan represents an opportunity to improve access and secure the long-term future management of the previously undeveloped parts of the site for recreational use and environmental benefit. In excess of 60% of the overall site area will not be developed and is to be retained as public accessible and biodiverse green space. Winchester Action on the Climate Crisis is concerned that any development will add to emissions and also hit biodiversity. Wynn ACC says, if there is to be a development, it needs to be designed, built and used to produce, one, a world-class development, a beacon and exemplar which our great-grandchildren will be proud of. Two, no net reduction of biodiversity, noting that brownfield land can be better for biodiversity than greenfield. Three, no net increase of transport emissions. And four, a net reduction in Winchester's greenhouse gas emissions overall. As reported, although technically in planning terms now classed as brownfield, land opponents say the fact that it has been largely untouched for more than 50 years means that it should now be considered greenfield.
Thank you, Deborah. My piece is headed £6 million scheme to house refugees. Winchester City Council will be taking over 16 houses in multiple occupation, that's HMOs, to provide more permanent accommodation for refugees. The council has been granted £2.4 million as part of a £500 million government fund supporting local authorities in providing homes for Ukrainian and Afghan families. 16 homes, which were predominantly used as student accommodation and were previously owned by the council, will house 16 Ukrainian families in Stanmore, Highcliffe, Winnell and Badger Farm. The City Council is expected to match fund more than £3 million, bringing the total scheme cost to more than £6 million, with an additional £300,000 to provide a four-bedroom home for an Afghan family currently living in a hotel. The proposal was heard at a cabinet meeting on Wednesday, May the 23rd, where it received support from both Liberal Democrat and Conservative councillors. Council leader, Councillor Martin Todd, said, "This proposal enables us to house Afghan and Ukrainian families in housing need. Importantly, it helps with our priority for rebuilding the community in our council estates by rebalancing the housing offer there and bringing former HMOs back into use as family houses, which is a long-desired objective to support the community." Winchester Conservative Group leader, Councillor Caroline Horrell, welcomed the scheme but said, "We need to ensure that we have the appropriate accommodation in our communities when Ukrainian families are offered Winchester's housing stock. particularly when it's a small community where people have local connection. They've been waiting some time because properties are limited and they see a Ukrainian guest have access to a property in advance to themselves. The City of Sanctuary champion, Councillor John Tippett Cooper, said, "It's not the case that those families are getting an advance as to housing will still be managed fairly, and this is additional funding specifically for Ukrainian families. Once and if these families move on, the houses will still be council properties, so there is a net benefit." Following initial visits, the council expects to spend £20,000 on each property. Currently, nearly 500 Ukrainian refugees are being homed across the Winchester district. And now we move on to the death notices.
Ashman, Rodney Leonard Ashman, on the 16th of May, aged 88.
Brooks, Janet Rosina Brooks, peacefully in her sleep on the 11th of May, aged 87.
Gorman, David Gorman, known as Gussie, peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 12th of May, aged 83.
Green, Pamela Joyce Green, née Finch, formerly from Oxford, peacefully at home on the 8th of May, aged 96.
Hills, Professor Raymond Clement Hills, known as Ray, peacefully in his sleep after a short illness on the 17th of May, aged 89.
Hilton, Michael Roderick Bentley Hilton, known as Rod, on the 10th of May, aged 86.
Loder, William Loder, known as Bill, peacefully on the 12th of April, aged 75.
Pierce, Raymond Pierce, peacefully at home on the 11th of May, aged 84.
Prince, Rita Margaret Prince, passed away in Winchester Hospice on the 13th of May, aged 81. And now we move on to Christian comment, which is being read by Deborah, please.
And this week it's offered by Nigel Hemmings, who is senior pastor of Winchester's Vineyard Church. The long levity of the great Queen Elizabeth meant that before this month, hardly any of us had ever witnessed an actual coronation service. The ceremony, the pageantry and the music in Westminster Abbey were all of the highest quality, and not even the rain could dampen the enthusiasm on the streets. The whole spectacle was hugely impressive. But for me, one of the most meaningful moments came right at the start of the formalities. It was an opening exchange between the King and a chorister representing the youth of the nation. Young person, Your Majesty, as children of the Kingdom of God, we welcome you in the name of the King of Kings. The King, in his name and after his example, I come not to be served, but to serve. It's a line from the Gospels which Jesus said of himself, and it's certainly something he lived out. Archbishop Justin Welby picked up on the theme in his sermon. Service is love in action. We see active love in our care for the most vulnerable, the way we nurture and encourage the young, in the conservation of the natural world. We have seen those priorities in the life of duty lived by our King. Charles, of course, has had his mother's towering and tireless example of service and duty to follow for the whole of his 70-plus years. Who can forget the same Archbishop's words at her funeral back in September? People of loving service are rare in any walk of life. Leaders of loving service are still rarer, but in all cases those who serve will be loved and remembered when those who cling to power and privileges are forgotten. But this goes much deeper than the royals. A life of love and service is something which all genuine disciples of Jesus commit to as they work out their everyday faith. Richard Charters, the former Bishop of London, starkly compares it to a parallel quest for greater knowledge. Knowledge translates directly into power, while love translates directly into service and self-giving. Christianity is essentially a willingness to follow and to love. We see this service powerfully enacted throughout the life and ministry of Jesus, as he loved the unlovely, embraced the unclean, and championed the marginalized. Jesus healed the sick, challenged the rich and pompous, and went the extra mile to demonstrate the love of God to all those who found themselves outside of the system. He showed love and compassion in so many ways throughout his life, and having trained up his disciples to do the same, he then performed the ultimate sacrifice by giving up his life on the cross and enabling everyone to reconnect with the love of God. His was the ultimate life of service. And as King Charles takes the throne, I can think of no better example for him to follow. Nigel Hemmings, Senior Pastor of Winchester Vineyard Church.
Thank you, Deborah. We now have letters to the editor. There are 9 letters this week, and for a change, they are all on different subjects. So, Richard, could you read the first letter, please?
Yes, which is about Bushfield Camp, just for a change, and it comes from Tony Gaster. Many will know that Bushfield Camp to the south of our city is being planned for redevelopment. It's probably a good thing. However, in all the documents I've seen, there's little to say about traffic management. At times, Winchester is gridlocked. Those who want Garnier Road closed also want to see more traffic in the city. There's little choice of routes. St. Cross Road cannot be enlarged. Badger Farm Road is already very busy at times with long queues. Romsey Road is just hopeless. The M3 is often at a standstill at busy times. So, would the developers, who we must admit have profit in mind, care to include, say, £100 million in their budget to improve traffic flow? Or are we to imagine everyone visiting this new development will be walking or taking a bus? Let's be realistic. It'll be more cars. Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, orders Battery, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah, please.
And the next letter is from Judith Martin, and she entitles it Lots to Do. We should, of course, congratulate the Lib Dems on strengthening their position on Winchester City Council in the recent elections. Though I can't help noticing that the largest majority, by some way, was won by the second Green Party candidate. I gather from the hustings held by Wynn ACC that this means the Green Party can now be represented on committees. Now the weeks of election purdah are over, can the council please look at some of the outstanding issues in the city, which may not yet be on the radar of the two Greens? There's the Corner House on North Walls and Parchment Street, bought 3 years ago by Winchester City Council to make into accommodation, but still standing empty, with windows full of dead plants. There's the old register office opposite the station, bought longer ago, renovated at some cost, and still unlet. There's the little house on the corner of Tower Street and Cross Street, originally owned by Winchester City Council, where £80,000 was spent to turn it into 2 eco-flats, before giving up the attempt and selling it. It's now, after a little work, on the market for £750,000, cementing the loss of a council house and creating something far out of the reach of the great majority of residents. On a far larger scale, there's the New Deal for Central Winchester Regeneration, ex Silver Hill, where the council is selling the site to a developer on terms likely to result in an effectively privatised area. We don't know yet what will be built, and there's no doubt some impressive architectural names have been mentioned. Yet when similarly award-winning names were bandied about in the North East on other schemes by the same developers, oddly their plans didn't come about. Similarly, the proposed social housing didn't come about either, with the developer citing the usual viability. This history doesn't seem to have emerged in the due diligence I'm sure Winchester City Council have carried out. There's an awful lot here that needs fixing by the new old council. Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
Thank you, Deborah. My letter is written by Phil Wakeman, and it's headed "Gift Shop Will Be Much Missed." Such a pity that the beautiful home interiors and accessories shop for me in Parchment Street is to close. Chronicle, May the 11th. I met Sylvia, Maurizio and Celeste when the shop first opened in 1999 and was instantly captivated by the beautiful Venetian glass on sale. I share Sylvia's and Maurizio's enthusiasm for Venetian glass, in particular the maker Zeguzzo, which meant I soon weakened and purchased some beautiful pieces which I treasure to this day. The shop window was always wonderfully decorated, Easter and Christmas bringing a special note. Anyone who has purchased something nice will always remember how beautifully Sylvia and Celeste gift-wrapped something special with ribbons and beads. Winchester shopping will be poorer with the loss of Forme, a great shame indeed. Thank you, Sylvia, Maurizio and Celeste. I wish you all the health and happiness as you return to Italy and, of course, to enjoy the wonderful sun, wine and food. And that is written by Phil Wakeman of Mears Road, Fair Oak. Richard, please.
Chris O'Neill writes about the Union Martyrs. Every year, thousands of trade unionists gather in Tolpaddle, Dorset, for a festival to celebrate the contribution to the development of trade unionism made by the five martyrs who in 1834 were the subject of a gross injustice leading to their deportation to Australia. As a result of public pressure, the men were subsequently released and returned to England. In time, four of the group decided to emigrate to Canada. When they died, gravestones and memorials were erected to mark their last resting place. Time has taken its toll on these structures, which now require renovation and repair. An appeal has been launched by the Siloam United Church in Canada in order that the necessary work can be undertaken. Hampshire Unison recently voted to donate to the appeal in acknowledgement of the contribution made by the Tolpuddle Martyrs to trade unionism. Chris O'Neill, Chair of the Hampshire Unison Retired Members Section.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah?
This one is from Karen Barrett. I'm also a patient at St Paul's, but unlike Tony Gaster, have not had any difficulty in seeing a GP when necessary, from the Chronicle on May the 18th. It may take a little longer these days, negotiating the inevitable phone menu, plus an initial chat with the doctor prior to getting a face-to-face appointment, but Mr Gaster's assertion of not being able to see a GP for years is hard to believe. As for the imposition of a charge for NHS services, the cost and bureaucratic complexity of any means-tested system, quite apart from unfairly penalising the sick, is not the solution. Some individuals always fall through the cracks with no option of going private unless they are, like Mr. Gaster, in a position to spend thousands of pounds on a holiday. The real problems for the NHS are underfunding, staff shortages and retention, and a government whose direction of travel appears to be replacing the NHS with a US-style system of private health insurance. Rather than wasting time appealing to Steve Bryan, Mr. Gaster would be better off joining doctors and other health professionals on the picket lines. They are the ones committed to a properly funded and adequately staffed NHS, and who, with our support, offer the best chance of saving it. Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Thank you, Deborah. The next letter is written by Mrs. Theophilus, sorry about that. Right, and it's headed traffic danger. We moved to the centre of Alresford just a couple of years ago, believing it to be a peaceful and lovely market town. Indeed, it is. However, life is blighted by the constant passage of heavy trucks, construction lorries, etc., which seem to use the town as a cut-through when there is a bypass around the town. Speed through the town seems to be irrelevant, which leaves me anxious for pedestrians trying to cross the main streets. The noise level is considerable, especially when laden trucks with skips, etc., go over a raised pedestrian crossing. Unlikely that anything can be done to stop the traffic, but how about a zebra crossing on Pound Hill outside Perrin School, and also a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit, which has to be policed in order to deter heavy traffic from using the town? And that is written by Mrs. Theolophicus of Pound Hill, Alresford. Richard, please.
Peter Fallon is concerned about the UK's past. If we're not careful, the UK, Great Britain, as I have known it, old values, morals, respect for elders, etc., etc., are being eroded away to accommodate every newfound fad or craze. Call it what you like in what people hail the modern world. If we're not careful, British will become strangers in a minority in our own country if politicians don't grasp a nettle and become tougher on immigration. There's not any country in the world who is without their own dark past. Yes, debate is fine. The lesson is to accept the past and build the future in the modern world. Where there is blame, there's a claim culture. The past is the past. Learn by it, don't destroy it. Southend.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah, please.
From Simon Lever. Water companies have been confronted for years due to their lack of investment and reactive approach. They have even been fined for not managing the raw sewage problem. Now it seems we all have to pay for their ignoring basic needs, fresh water and raw sewage management. The M3 motorway project was commenced without proper consultation. Further smart motorways have been condemned by all motoring organisations because they're potentially lethal. A man was killed on the M3 near Winchester on Tuesday, May the 16th, because there was no hard shoulder. Millions of pounds of public money had been wasted. There's a giant solar farm along the A34. The mission to achieve zero carbon emissions may or may not be achieved. However, if acres of pristine green areas and farmland are destroyed, it will increase the carbon footprint. Such construction needs to be thought through rigorously. The present planned area will destroy the most beautiful countryside. Would it be possible to place panels on every building? After all, they are linked to the grid. Are the solar systems imported? Like everyone, Winchester area is precious and green fields never should be taken for granted. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Thank you, Deborah. The last letter comes from Liz Blunt and it's headed Volunteer Thanks. To celebrate Volunteers Week from the 1st to the 7th of June, here at Young Lives vs Cancer, we want to take the opportunity to say a huge thank you to all of our incredible volunteers who help us in Hampshire. We are lucky to have an amazing team of passionate volunteers who have created a real sense of community and championed the charity. Volunteers are crucial to our work and mission to help families find the strength to face everything cancer throws at them. We've been there before. We'll face it all together. Volunteers make Young Lives versus Cancer who we are. The benefits of volunteering are felt by everyone, from the volunteers themselves to our staff teams, and most importantly, the children and young people that we support. Whether that's volunteers in our shops, with office, warehouse or remote teams, volunteers with our social care teams, in our home from homes and our fundraising volunteers. We wouldn't be Young Lives versus Cancer without every single one of them stepping up and joining the team. Often a volunteer comes to us after a personal experience of cancer in their family, but many also give their time to meet new people, develop their skills, or simply because they want to make a real difference. We are always looking for more volunteers. That is written by Liz Blunt, who is the fundraising engagement manager for Hampshire. Well, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Or you could drop in when you're next in Winchester Town Centre. Well, we now move on to editorial comment, read by Deborah, please.
Yesterday, the demolition of the former Friars Gate GP practice in Winchester City Centre was finally approved by the planners. It paves the way for the creation of a pop-up open space next to the bus station. In the long run, the area is likely to be a key part of the regeneration scheme being worked on between the council and Jigsaw Consortium, who were appointed earlier this year. The planning committee heard criticism of this meanwhile use, which is rather misplaced. Even with a fair wind, the final development scheme is several years away. It's much better to provide some public benefit than waste taxpayers' money looking after a deteriorating building. There was a suggestion that housing should go on the site. Perhaps in the long run it will, but it would be premature to do so now and impinge on proposals being drawn up. As with the building work set to start on the new St Clement surgery on Upper Brook Street, the demolition of Friars Gate surgery is a small step in the right direction for this much-needed revamp of the city centre. It's worth restating that Stagecoach initially proposed redeveloping the bus station back in the late 1980s. Three cheers would be too many, so would two, but this progress is certainly worth one hurrah.
Thank you, Deborah. Now, I'm going to read the opinion piece, which is written this week by Khalid Aziz, and it's headed Postcard from France. A few days away in Brittany gives a little perspective on our own trials and tribulations back home. La Bretagne is rather like Cornwall or Wales, only marginally warmer and with less rain. The views are spectacular, particularly along La Côte de la Granit Rose, the pink granite coast. The craggy rock formations provide endless fascination for land lubbers and a nightmare for visiting sailors, with rapidly drying creeks and endless rocks lying just beneath the waves. Some of the biggest tides in the world, well over 30 feet, provide challenging races to battle against. We are here most years, at least twice, and it is interesting to note their retail and hospitality businesses are challenged just like ours. But the French, ever practical with their someone must pay attitude to charging, haven't held back. A set formula lunch has jumped from around €12 last year to €21 this, but the restaurants are rammed. The wheels of commerce still turn. In one crucial area, the French consumer is clearly better off than his Brit counterpart. When the pitiful Putin invaded Ukraine, President Macron was quick to ensure that electricity price rises were capped at just 4%, made possible thanks to past investment in nuclear energy, much of it thoughtfully sited at the Cap de la Hague on the northern tip of France. This ensures that if, God forbid, there was a nuclear accident, with the prevailing southwesterly wind, southern Britain would get the benefit of any fallout. Something to look forward to. Until Putin's war, petrol was always around 10 pence a litre cheaper than the UK, but today it's at least 10 pence more. Diesel, in sharp contrast to the UK, remains significantly cheaper than petrol. There are no signs of food banks, although prices have shot up in supermarkets. Lobster, I know, not exactly peasant food these days, had remained for several years at around €20 a kilo. Now it cannot be had for less than 40, and so for the rest of the food chain. As in the UK, independent shops are struggling. Our local plumber, a bleak electrician, who has enjoyed a usurious monopoly of repair work around us, assured me, when I bumped into him in his local bar, that his contracted business would still continue despite having to close the family washing machine to light bulb retail business of some 50 years, leaving his empty premises looking like another missing eye in the increasingly defenestrated village high street. 30 years ago, there were 3 bakers. Now there's just one. Thankfully, the best one. But he has to compete with a ring of supermarkets within a 5-mile radius. His superior tarte aux pommes sells for €15 against a mere 4 in the supermarkets. Against all this, the locals are still welcoming. I wish I could say the same about Brittany Ferries, official in Portsmouth, who almost kiboshed us when travelling on this trip. The French vet who had issued our dog passport had apparently made a mistake in not transferring our British vet's entries in full. Despite the fact that we had travelled with Brittany Ferries twice previously with the same passport, the French duty manager, delighted in waving in my face the comprehensively filled in British vet's record card, complete with vaccine stickers. After Brexit, this is just a piece of cardboard. It is worthless. Unnecessarily rude, I thought, along with a few other unprintable thoughts. Having made his point, he allowed us to travel at your own risk. In St. Malo, they were sweetness and light. These are tough times, so we think people, even officials, will be a little more accommodating. We have more to go through yet, I fear, so to channel the words of the great Sergeant Esterhaus of Hill Street Blues, let's be careful out there. Let's remember to look after each other. This week's letter from Westminster comes from Flick Drummond, who's the Member of Parliament for the Mearn Valley. Richard, to read, please.
This month, I tabled a parliamentary bill to ensure homeschooled children are registered because of widespread safety concerns over a sharp rise in those not educated in the classroom. The children not in school brackets register bill would replace a legal duty on local authorities to maintain a register of children who are not in school. I hope the government will support it. There are now up to 81,000 children in England who are being homeschooled, but no one is tracking them or knows if the education is the required standard or if the child is safe. This is a huge concern. The 10-minute rule bill, a mechanism whereby backbench MPs like me can table legislation, received quite a lot of publicity, including the Israel Times. This was because a group of Orthodox Jews protested about it outside Parliament in the morning. I think if they'd waited to hear my speech, they would have realised that it is not a threat to them or anyone who is actually teaching children. This is very much for those children who are not receiving an education at all, and it will enable local authorities to identify them and put in support. I will now work with the Department for Education to put this into legislation. Trying to drive change like this for the good of children is something I'm passionate about and one of the reasons why I became an MP. I have long lobbied for pharmacies to have a greater role in primary care, and I often visit local chemists across the Mearn Valley to understand their views. This is something many have called for, and I have spoken to several ministers about it. So, earlier this month, there was good news on this front when the government announced that everyone will be able to go to chemists for some common prescriptions and routine tests without a visit to a GP. NHS England said it will free up to 15 million GP appointments over the next 2 years to help ease pressure on surgeries. Pharmacy services will receive £645 million over the next 2 years to expand staffing and resources to roll this out. Bookings for NHS physiotherapy or podiatry will also be taken without the need to go to the GP. The ailments patients can go straight to a pharmacist for are earaches, sore throat, sinusitis, impetigo, shingles, infected insect bites and uncomplicated urinary tract infections in women. We need to be innovative to tackle pressure, to take the pressure off GPs and A&Es as we tackle pressures on the NHS. This is what the doctor ordered, if you excuse the pun, and I welcome it. Foreign affairs continues to be an area I am keen to be involved in. Last week I was involved in a panel with opposition MPs on Palestine, where I spoke about the lack of succession planning for when President Mahmoud Abbas stands down, and about education. Sadly, Israel, which has a world-class education system and research, has just demolished a Palestinian school, and there's a lot of work to do to, and others are marked for demolition. We need to solve this issue and work hard with both sides for the good of everyone in the region. I'll be going to Palestine during recess to see what's happening on the ground. Please watch this space for an update on the visit.
Thank you, Richard. Now, as you probably know, Belgarum gives us an alternative look at the news. Two items this week. Deborah, could you read the first, please?
Yes, this is entitled Star Wars Visitor Drops In. One of Darth Vader's stormtroopers visited hospices in Sutton Scotney as part of Star Wars Day. One of Darth Vader's stormtroopers escaped the Death Star for the day to spread some joy at the hospices for children and young adults. The visit was courtesy of Tony from Southampton-based stormtrooper double act The Trooper Guys, who regularly volunteer their time to visit Naomi House and Jack's Place. The stormtrooper said, "Naomi House and Jack's Place has always been a charity that means a great deal to us. Over the years, we have seen how the care they give to the children makes a world of difference to not just the children, but the families as a whole."
Thank you, Deborah. The second piece is called Eurovision Fan's Dream Gig. A Ukrainian refugee's dreams have come true when she received tickets to watch the Eurovision final. Winchester resident Louis Bob Chakova, 44, was one of a few lucky entrants who won tickets to the grand final in Liverpool thanks to a competition for Ukrainian refugees. Following a year away from her home in Kyiv, Louis Bob was excited to get a taste of Liverpool with her sister at the Eurovision Song Contest. Despite having their train tickets cancelled due to strikes, the pair managed to make it to the stadium after hitching a lift with others stuck in Winchester before getting the train from Basingstoke to London and then London to Liverpool. Louis Bvov, who lives by Winchester bus station, said, "I've always been a big fan and constantly watched it back when I was in the Ukraine. I was surprised to get tickets and very much enjoyed it. The sound system was great, the performances were beautiful, and the event was so well organised. It was amazing to watch it with my own eyes and not behind the screen." Louis Bov, who works from home for a Ukrainian company, has been supported by the International Rescue Committee. She said, "I am comfortable here in Winchester, and the people here are kind and more than happy to help." When we now come on to an item of historical interest, and it's entitled Moses Buys an 1100-year-old Bible, and Richard's going to tell us about it.
Yes, an 1100-year-old Hebrew Bible that is one of the world's oldest surviving biblical manuscripts sold for $38 million US dollars in New York recently. The Codex Sassoon, a leather-bound handwritten parchment volume containing a nearly complete Hebrew Bible, which purchased by the former US ambassador to Romania, Alfred H. Moses, on behalf of the American Friends, and donated to the Museum of the Jewish People in Tel Aviv, where it will join the collections. The manuscript was exhibited at a museum in March as part of a worldwide tour before the auction. Sotheby's specialist, Sharon Lieberman-Mintz, said the price tag, which includes the auction house's fee, reflects the profound power, influence and significance of the Hebrew Bible, which is an indispensable pillar of humanity. It's one of the highest prices for a manuscript sold at auction. In 2021, a rare copy of the US Constitution sold for $43 million. Leonardo da Vinci's Codex Leicester sold for $31 million in 1994, or around $60 million in today's dollars. Miss Mintz said she was absolutely delighted by today's monumental result, and that Codex Sassoon will shortly be making its grand and permanent return to Israel on display for the world to see. It's believed to have been fabricated in the 9th or 10th century. It got its name in 1929, when it was purchased by David Solomon Sassoon, a son of an Iraqi Jewish business magnate who filled his London home with collections of Jewish manuscripts. Mr. Sassoon's estate was broken up after he died, and the Biblical Codex was sold by Sotheby's in Zurich in 1978 to the British Rail Pension Fund for about $320,000. The pension fund sold the Codex Sassoon 11 years later to Jackie Sufra, a banker and art collector, who bought it in 1989 for $2.5 million.
Now, we have a few things going on in the Winchester area which you might find interesting. The first is entitled Prehistoric Theatre Show, and this does not refer to the next production at the Chesil Theatre. Children in Winchester will have a chance to meet dinosaurs in person at the Theatre Royal's prehistoric production. Dinosaur Adventure Live will take over the Theatre Royal stage on Saturday, June the 3rd and Sunday, June the 4th. The show, created by Red Entertainment, will follow intrepid rangers on a quest to recover the data crystal, restore power to the island and save the dinosaurs, while introducing young audiences to some of the most incredible species to have walked the earth in prehistoric times. Viewers can learn the history of the Jurassic era and meet, greet and feed baby dinosaurs, including giant dinosaurs that could even eat them. The interactive show at the Theatre Royal, brought to life with realistic dinosaur puppets, is suitable for young and old. Your item, please.
Yes, Army Corps granted freedom of the city. A branch of the army has been granted freedom of entry to parade through the city of Winchester. The Royal Logistic Corps, based in Worthy Down, was given the right to carry arms within the city boundaries by the Mayor of Winchester. Freedom of entry is an ancient privilege and allows the corps to parade by permission of the council through the city to the beat of drums with swords drawn, bayonets fixed and colours flying. Proposing the motion, council leader Councillor Todd said, "The Royal Logistic Corps has a proud history, as our city has a proud history. While they only recently moved their headquarters to our district, their connections with the city go back much further. I thoroughly recommend a visit to the RLC Museum at Worthy Down to learn more. It's an excellent addition to our area. But both the Corps and the City Council are looking to the future. We're very fortunate to have such a world-class, innovative and adaptable organisation as a strong new part of our city and district. There is no better way to thank the RLC for their service to this country, the close ties that we already form with them, and their commitment to a shared future with our city and district." The Royal Logistic Corps will celebrate its 30th anniversary on Thursday, June the 1st, with a parade through the city, starting from the Peninsula Barracks and forming at the Broadway from 9:30 a.m. The parade will be live streamed across the Royal Logistic Corps' social media platforms.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah, your piece, please.
And this is a line-up for Poets Festival. An amazing line-up of poetry is coming to Winchester as part of the city's poetry festival this summer. Writing Our Legacy has joined forces with Winchester Poetry Festival to bring their popular poetry room to the Arc. The event will be held on Saturday, June the 7th. Poetry Room boasts a line-up of the United Kingdom's finest creatives, thinkers and musicians all under one roof. The hosts for the evening are the poet, writer, performer Abdullah Richards and DJ Fever 2 Ray of African Night Fever. Special guests are scientist, writer and activist Jasmine Qureshi, British-Iranian artist and writer Alina Azida, Indian writer and poet Susmita Bhattachary, and up-and-coming poet Casey Hill. The panel will consider the big issues for the African, Caribbean, Asian and global majority and provide a space where everyone is welcome. Amy Zumaripa Solis, Writing Our Legacy CEO, said, "Writing Our Legacy is privileged to be working with some amazing Winchester organisations to bring our diverse writers and creatives to the area, including Winchester Poetry Festival, Hampshire Cultural Trust and City of Sanctuary, with support from the South Downs National Park Authority and Arts Council England. Poetry is the living heartbeat of our cultural heritage. We're looking forward to joining you on June the 3rd with this amazing poetry lineup."
Thank you, Tebra. Now, looking through what's in the Hampshire Chronicle's What's On diary over the coming days, a number of items here, many of them at the Theatre Royal Winchester, but not all. On Wednesday the 31st of May, 7:30 at Thorndon Hall in Eastleigh, there's Honk, this delightful and award-winning adaptation of one of the world's most beloved fables. Thursday on the 1st of June, it's Rose Season at Mottisfont Gardens, that's Mottisfont Lane, Romsey. Saturday the 3rd of June, Come and Sing the Armed Man, that is The Armed Man, A Mass for Peace by Carl Jenkins, and that is at St Michael's Church in Winchester. Also on Saturday there is Winchester Comedy Festival, that is at the Theatre Royal Winchester. Monday the 5th of June at the Theatre Royal again, Best of Enemies, National Theatre live cinema screening of James Graham's Best of Enemies. Tuesday the 6th, The Complete Works of William Shakespeare, once again at the Theatre Royal Winchester. In case you don't know, they don't read the entire works of William Shakespeare. It's actually a very clever and very amusing run through of the plays. It's incredible. Wednesday the 7th of June, Chesil Railway Guided Tour, that's at 6:30. You buy your tickets from the Guildhall in Winchester. It's a guided walk exploring the route of Winchester's other railway, the old Didcot to Newbury and Southampton line. Also on the Wednesday the 7th, there is a talk on W.H. Hudson by Connor Jameson. W.H. Hudson apparently was a renowned naturalist. That's at Shawford Village Hall. Friday the 9th, Winchester Rotary, charity fire walk. If you fancy walking on hot coals, you'd be very welcome there. That is at, where is it? Oh, Trinity Winchester. Also on the 9th, the Drifters are back on tour in the UK, and that is at the Winchester Theatre Royal. Sunday the 11th, Craft Makers Market at the Worthies Sports and Social Club. And lastly, Tuesday the 13th, Midsummer Night's Dream, award-winning Flabbergast Theatre return to Winchester. After wowing audiences with their interpretation of Macbeth in 2022, and that again is the Theatre Royal, Winchester. Well, finally, before we go on to items of general news, let's have a look at the lighting up times for the coming week. The sun, if there is any, will rise at about 5 a.m. and set again at around 9 p.m. So, items of general news. Richard, we have your first article, please.
Yes, City Vicar's message of hope for politicians. A Winchester vicar recently visited Parliament to speak to MPs and peers over breakfast following their regular Wednesday morning Holy Communion. Every month, a group of MPs gather on a Wednesday morning at St Margaret's Church behind Westminster Abbey for Holy Communion before heading to the Speaker's House for a talk over breakfast. The Reverend Simon Cansdale, Vicar of Christ Church Winchester, was invited to speak to the group, kicking off this year's theme of Stories of Hope. Christ Church is a church of 600 to 700 people with an emphasis on prison, university, hospice and hospital ministry, and multiple volunteer groups in the city. This was of interest to the group and made the basis for the Reverend Cansdale's talk.
Well, before we go on to items of general news, let's have a look at the lighting up times for the coming week. The sun, if there is any, will rise at about 5 a.m. and set again at around 9 p.m. So, Richard, could we have your first article, please?
Yes, Communard's vicar shares his life story. A well-known vicar who was in the band The Communards in the 1980s will be at Winchester Cathedral in June. The Reverend Richard Coles and Dean Catherine Ogle joined together for an evening of conversation on June 22nd at 7 p.m. The conversation is expected to explore a wide range of topics, including faith, spirituality, the role of the church in society, as well as other contemporary issues. During the event, Reverend Coles and Dean Ogle will delve into the profound influence of loss and faith on Reverend Coles' life, as well as the significant role that writing has played in his journey. Additionally, guests will have an opportunity to explore the Reverend Coles' latest book, A Death in the Parish, the second instalment in his crime novel series featuring Canon Clement. The pair first crossed paths during Reverend Coles' theological college training when Dean Ogle was the vicar of Huddersfield. Reflecting on their initial encounter, the Dean said, "As a former fan of the Communards, I was delighted when Richard joined us and made a conscious effort not to treat him any differently. I wondered how he would navigate the transition into priesthood and parish ministry. Needless to say, I had nothing to worry about. Over the years, I've witnessed him bring it all together with brilliance, passion and aplomb." The event's schedule will consist of a 45-minute conversation, followed by a question and answer session and book signings.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah, please.
Riverside Pub reopens in time for the summer. A pub in a Hampshire village nearby the railway station has reopened following a six-figure transformation. The Bridge Inn in Shawford opened on Monday, May the 22nd, showing off its full refurbishment with hundreds of thousands of pounds going into modernising the interior and exterior. The Rural Spot, which is part of Green King's Chef and Brewer collection of country pubs, has a new outside bar with glass-top gazebos fitted with heating and lighting to improve al fresco dining. Inside, the inn has room for 20 more guests with new furniture and furnishings throughout. Alongside the opening is the launch of the Bridge's spring menu, including weekend brunch, daily specials and seasonal cocktails. General Manager John Molly said, "With summer just around the corner, we couldn't be more excited to show our newly refurbished pub off to our guests both old and new. There's never been a better time to enjoy premium al fresco dining in our new look garden terrace, and we have no doubt it will be hugely popular. Being located next to the beautiful River Itchen makes us a perfect spot to pop in for a drink and to sample some premium pub food after a walk round the local area or a hike through the nearby country trails. We can't wait to welcome our guests back." As part of the revamp, the team is recruiting with both full and part-time positions available for front of house, kitchen staff and management.
Thank you, Deborah. This seems to be the time for reopening pubs, because my item is headed Pub to Reopen After Years Out of Action. Winchester's longest running vacant pub could be reopening. Star Pubs and Bars is hoping to reopen the First In, Last Out, also known as Philo, as soon as possible after more than 4 years of the free house being empty. The company plans to spend nearly £250,000 refurbishing the historic pub in Wales Street, which was closed due to structural issues in 2019. The new sign that reads "Refurbishment Planned, Lease This Pub" have been installed with a picture of the proposed design. A spokesperson for Star Pubs and Bars said the company intends to spend £250,000 on a major revamp of the First In, Last Out, subject to recruiting a new licensee to create a top quality community local. The investment will see a new kitchen introduced to enable the pub to offer pub grub classics, and an upgrade of the interior decor, including new dining furniture and a darts area with LED halo dartboard and electronic scoreboard. The exterior of the pub will also benefit from redecoration and the creation of a landscaped riverside garden with waterproof sail, festooned lighting, and picnic style benches for al fresco eating and drinking. Currently, the garden is overgrown with weeds, even sprouting from the door, and the windows are boarded up. Urgent structural works were carried out on the listed building in 2021, with the entire gable end wall not being properly attached to the rest of the building. In 2013, its bedrooms were pegged as the worst B&B rooms in the country and featured on the TV programme The Hotel Inspector when it tried, unsuccessfully, to turn it round. The First In, Last Out has been dispensing beer since at least 1896, originally as a beer house that was licensed to sell beer but not spirits. The pub has been a free house since 1976, having previously been a Charrington's house. Philo has been listed on the website Find My Pub, with an ingoing cost of £38,291 and an annual rent of £27,165. Richard, please.
Team effort to the rescue of ducklings in drain. A mother duck in distress was helped by a concerned student who realised her ducklings had fallen down the drain. University of Winchester student Kiara and staff member Catherine Lawrence ventured on a daring duckling rescue to save several young ducks. Catherine said, "Mother duck was distressed, but I and others before me had just shooed her safely out of the path of oncoming traffic and couldn't work out what was wrong. Kiara thought to look in the drain, and sure enough we could see and hear several very new ducklings. We called a wonderful groundsman, James, to help, and he thought to go and get his litter picker and very gently used it to raise the ducklings one by one out of the drain, passing them to Kiara. As Kiara walked slowly down the pond holding the ducklings, they called out to their mother to follow and were reunited happily at the pond. Kiara checked again in the afternoon and found a further duckling. Several of the grounds team helped her to rescue the duckling, nicknamed Bumblebee, but as yet no sign of Mum. Bumblebee is being cared for, and the search for Mum will resume."
Thank you, Richard. Deborah, please.
Jail for attack on girlfriend. A young man from a village near Winchester has been jailed for stalking and then attacking his girlfriend, he accused of being unfaithful. Kieran Stonier, 23, of Fraser Road, Kingsbridge, bombarded the woman with around 900 calls and text messages over 17 days in December and January, a court heard. On January the 6th, he got into her home when she was sleeping and assaulted her, as well as smashing her TV, said Ewan Callaghan, prosecuting at Winchester Crown Court. The attack happened at a property in Springvale Road, Kingsworthy, the court heard. He admitted stalking, assault and criminal damage, as well as breaching a suspended sentence order. Mitigating, Tom Atworth said, "This is a case of a young man who has a lot of growing up to do. He needs to work on his ability to control himself. To say he's immature might be to underestimate things. Since he's been on remand, he has abstained from cocaine and alcohol, contributory factors in the disgraceful way he behaved towards his girlfriend." The lawyer added, "He's extremely fortunate in having the support of his family. He recognises that the relationship has come to an end. He behaved badly. He must not see her again. He knows that." Sentencing, Judge Richard Parks, KC, said the victim's impact statement said the relationship had been going well until just before last Christmas, when Stonier accused her of being unfaithful. "Over 17 days, you sent something like 900 messages or calls. Their content was largely the same, accusing her time after time after time of being unfaithful to you. You turned up at her house in the middle of the night when she was asleep. You accused her of sleeping with other men, threatening her, and she was frightened of you." The judge jailed Stonier for 14 months. He imposed a 2-month sentence for the stalking, assault and criminal damage, and activated 12 months of a suspended 14-month sentence imposed in 2021 for drug dealing. A court heard that Stonier had fled his home in his underpants after the police called, only to be arrested by two officers waiting at the back of the property. Stonier had only done 1 hour of unpaid work in a 200-hour community service, the court heard. The judge also added a 5-year restraining order banning any contact with the woman or going to Springvale Road in Kingsworthy.
Thank you, Deborah. My item is headed, "Incredible Lady Feels Just Fine, Turning 100. A Chesil Lodge resident recently celebrated her 100th birthday. Alice Larden marked the occasion with the centre's staff, who provided flowers and a birthday party. Born in London in 1923, Mrs. Larden lived in the King's Cross area for most of her life. The eldest of four girls, she married George in 1941 and enjoyed a busy family life as a housewife, caring for the couple's children, Christine, Janet and Leonard. They moved to Winchester area in 1989 for retirement, and George died in 1993. She shares her birthday with her youngest child, Leonard, known as Len, who was born in 1948, weighing almost 11 pounds. In a room with a view of St. Paul's Cathedral. Len lives in Oliver's Battery and visits his mum almost every day. He said, "Mother says that I was always her best and biggest birthday present. She survived her three sisters, and her own mum died when she was a teenager, so a century is certainly a remarkable age to have reached. I joked to Mother that the target we're going for is 111. So the plan is simply to carry on regardless." Mrs. Larden, who currently has 6 grandchildren and 8 great-grandchildren, was evacuated to Ruislip during World War II whilst pregnant. Her daughter Janet, who has lived in Denver, Colorado for 28 years, said, "Mum told us stories about a big country house being turned into a hospital and walking over stiles and being chased by ducks when she was almost ready to have her baby, which, as you can imagine, was quite uncomfortable. She made our dresses as children and she made her own wedding dress. Dad worked very hard and we were one of the first to have a television in our street. Throughout the years, she's been the go-to person in our family, and she has always been very caring." Chita Sungay, for service manager at Cheswell Lodge, said, "We love looking after Mrs. Larden. She has a real sense of humour, and she's such an incredible lady. She's still able to touch her toes." "We organised 100 cards to mark the occasion, and they have been signed by everyone, including her fellow residents, service users, health professionals and staff. And it's only the second time we've had the official birthday card from the palace, so that was very exciting. As long as we can make the residents happy, that's the important thing. When asked about her birthday, Mrs. Larden was positive about the experience. "Oh, I don't mind being old. I feel fine." Richard, please.
Runners think pink, raising thousands for cancer charity. The Winchester Race for Life took place last weekend, with competitors running to raise money for charity. In the event's 30th year, men, women and children remembered loved ones that they have lost, celebrated survivors and did their bit to safeguard future generations by raising £25,000 for life-saving research. A parade of pink ran, jogged and walked the 3 kilometre or 5 kilometre routes around the North Walls Recreation Ground, including Alison Carter from Winchester, with daughters Emily 14, Charlotte 12 and friend Lily Burridge 13. Alison said, "This is our first time doing Race for Life because my mum had breast cancer and my husband's uncle has recently been diagnosed with blood cancer. We want to keep fighting the fight and have raised around £220 between us." A pink flamingo was flanked by 25 workers from Tesco, Winchester, in memory of their colleague Les, who died from bowel cancer 2 months ago. Lucy Burgess said, "He was an inspirational colleague and someone you could always rely on. He's left a big hole, so we wanted the Race for Life to heat today for him." Eliza Mitchell, Cancer Research UK spokesman in Winchester, said, "We're incredibly grateful to everyone who took part in the Race for Life. Life-saving research is being funded right now, thanks to our supporters who fundraise. The atmosphere at Race for Life was hugely moving, full of emotion, courage, tears and laughter, as people celebrated the lives of those dear to them who have survived cancer and remembered ones lost to the disease. Now we're asking everyone who took part to return the money they've raised as soon as possible. Funds raised, whether it's £10 or £100, will help scientists find new ways to prevent, diagnose and treat cancer, helping save more lives."
Thank you, Richard. Deborah?
Mission will honour national servicemen. A Fareham man is planning to travel round the United Kingdom to raise money for plaques honouring those who did national service. Former national serviceman Michael Homer, 84, will travel to 50 county towns as part of his plaque-a-thon, including Winchester, Aldershot and Truro. The campaign will start on the 27th of June and will take 12 days, ending on July the 10th. Michael, who was a National Service ambulance driver from 1958 to 1960, explained that he wanted to undertake the fundraising challenge to raise money for more plaques to commemorate national servicemen. He said, "I am obviously a national serviceman. 2.2 million men did national service. Unfortunately, quite a few of them never came home. And others, like myself, have problems. I have hearing and balance problems. I'm the chairman of the National Service Veterans Alliance, and there are only 7 plaques in the whole of the United Kingdom to commemorate national servicemen, and we think this is not right. So what I've planned to do is the plaque-a-thon. I thought, right, if I try and visit 50 county towns, Winchester being one, and also towns of what I call military importance, Aldershot, Portsmouth, Plymouth and other places, the plaque-a-thon, which took Michael more than 6 months to plan, will see him travel to the different towns by train, accompanied for parts of the journey by fellow ex-National Serviceman Roy Hunt and representatives from the different branches of the armed forces. Upon arriving at each town's train station, a representative will sign a document confirming that Michael arrived before he heads on to his next destination. The campaign will raise money through donations before approaching the councils of the visited towns to petition for plaques to be erected. Michael explained, "I'll have to see how things go, but once I've done the challenge, and hopefully the money will go in, because it's going in through GoFundMe, so consequently, once that money is in, then I've got to approach the towns to ask them if they would care to have a plaque up. I've dropped hints to various councils about what I'm doing, and again they've said, oh, that's interesting, Mike. So hopefully we can get all the ones done. We have 7, and I would love to see 70, if I'm being honest with you.
Thank you, Deborah. My piece is headed Climate Activist Step Up M3 Plan Opposition. An environmental action group held a protest against the plans for a major upgrade of Junction 9 on the M3. On Tuesday, May the 16th, members of Extinction Rebellion Winchester protested outside the Wessex Hotel. Excuse me. The next day, an open floor hearing was held with people scrutinising the plans. National Highways estimate that the cost of the whole scheme will be in the region of £190 to £210 million. The plans by National Highways, formerly the Highways Agency, have been in motion since 2013, when it was decided that infrastructure improvements were necessary. The aim of the improvements is to reduce delays on all links from Junction 9 of the M3 near Eastleigh, which includes the A33, A34 and M3. However, concerns were raised at the hearing, including about the increased capacity of the surrounding road and cycling networks, environmental impacts and safety. An Extinction Rebellion Winchester spokesman said, "Road congestion costs the UK economy billions a year and impacts on our health and well-being. But we cannot build our way out of congestion with more and bigger roads because of a proven phenomenon called induced traffic. This means that the more road capacity we create, the more traffic uses it. This extra traffic means that the predicted congestion benefits of the new road are often quickly eroded. Traffic levels on expanded roads can also rise faster than expected due to induced traffic, all of which means that the hoped-for benefits of a new road will evaporate very quickly. The only way to reduce congestion is to have fewer cars on the roads, and this means switching investments to public transport, walking and cycling. If we are serious about climate change, we have to reduce the demand for car use rapidly, and this means putting the brakes on expanding capacity. The scheme is likely to cost over £200 million, which would buy over 400 electric buses or build 75 miles of segregated cycleways. The measures would transform traffic in Hampshire, reducing road congestion and, most importantly, reducing our carbon footprint, of which a staggering 60% in Winchester already comes from transport. Moreover, if sums like this were diverted from road schemes up and down the country, we would fundamentally transform travel across the whole country, making a huge contribution towards our reducing carbon emissions." Richard, please.
Court fined for woman over loud noise. A woman who repeatedly snubbed a council order to turn down her music has been hit with a heavy fine. Sophie Stott of the Valley Stanmore played loud music between September the 16th last year and January the 9th this year, a court heard. Neighbours complained to the City Council, but Stott ignored the request to turn the music down. She'd been served with a noise abatement notice by Winchester City Council. The court heard that she admitted the charge of failing to comply with this order. Stott was not present in court to hear District Judge Stephen Apted impose a £200 fine with an £80 victim surcharge and costs of £100. The money, totalling £380, will be deducted from her benefits.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah, please.
And this is on the thorny subject of potholes. A total of 1,175 claims have been submitted to the County Council this year regarding damages to vehicles and accidents due to potholes, it has been revealed. At the Hampshire annual meeting on May the 18th, Councillor Jackie Porter asked Councillor Nick Adams-King how many motorists and cyclists have made claims, whether successful or not, for damaged vehicles and accidents due to potholes in the first 3 months of 2023. Councillor Adams-King said that from January the 1st to March the 31st, there were 1,175 claims. He said the majority of the claims would not yet have the decision made on liability. Most would still be with the highways team for processing. Using her supplementary question, Councillor Porter asked again whether that was the usual figure or could it vary throughout the year. Councillor Adams-King said, "I cannot do a like for like. I would say that looking at previous years, we are ahead of the average that we would normally have." He reminded the Chamber that people have 6 years to submit a claim. In March, Hampshire County Council received 594,400 from the government spring budget to help local communities tackle and repair potholes. At the time, Councillor Nick Adams-King, the County Council's executive lead member for Universal Services, said that over the winter, the County Council repaired 16,748 potholes and other road defects due to the increased reported issues.
Thank you, Deborah. My piece is headed College Pledges to Lead the Way Against Racism. Peter Simmons College recently held a unique event to pledge its commitment to anti-racism. It was held on Tuesday, May the 16th, and College Principal Sarah Russell praised those involved. She said, "Our college ethos of celebrating individuality, celebrating and promoting community and strengthening representation is one that we are proud of. But there is more that we can do. Pledging our commitment to anti-racism and encouraging the college as a whole to continue to shape a culture and community to which everyone can belong is a priority for us." The Anti-Racism Pledge event brought together students and staff who shared their insights and experiences of what it means to belong and to be represented within a large, diverse college community. Zach Hussein, president of the student union, said, "For me, anti-racism is about knowing what racism is, the forms it can take, and being able to take action against it. One of the best things about Peter Simmons is that we are treated as individuals, and our differences are celebrated." Stevie Abrahams and Tisha Latkar also shared their experiences and explained why representation matters. Tisha said, "When I was younger, I felt under pressure to adapt to a culture that wasn't really mine or who I was. This pledge allows us to open doors to other opportunities, to raise awareness and make positive change." Stevie said, "At Peter Simmons, there is the freedom and opportunity to really express myself in the way that I want, being able to explore our culture and share it with others, such as on Ethnic Clothing Day, which has so far been one of the best moments." The Landmark Pledge event was also attended by Robin Landman, OBE, co-founder and director of the Black Leadership Group. He said, "This pledge by Peter Simmons College is an important initiative and builds on some of the great work of the colleges has undertaken as a leading member of the BLG affiliate community. We especially applaud this because Peter Simmons is one of the country's largest sixth form colleges with a rating of outstanding. So this is a top institution in education that is truly leading the way on anti-racism. Making this pledge is a collective college decision and demonstrates strong leadership on an important social issue." And Richard, please.
City Vicar's message of hope for politicians. a Winchester vicar recently visited Parliament to speak to MPs and peers over breakfast following their regular Wednesday morning Holy Communion. Every month, a group of MPs gather on a Wednesday morning at St Margaret's Church behind Westminster Abbey for Holy Communion, before heading to the Speaker's House for a talk over breakfast. The Reverend Simon Cansdale, Vicar of Christ Church Winchester, was invited to speak to the group, kicking off this year's theme of Stories of Hope. Christ Church is a church of 600 to 700 people, with an emphasis on prison, university, hospice and hospital ministry, and multiple volunteer groups in the city. This was of interest to the group and made the basis for Reverend Cansdale's talk. An MP said, "It was truly wonderful to have Simon Cansdale join us for our monthly Holy Communion and to speak to our group over breakfast. It's no small feat, and nor is catching the 5:30 a.m. train to do so. We salute and pray for you, Simon."
Thank you, Deborah.
Water supplies hit by burst pipe. Contractors worked to repair a major pipe burst in Colden Common on Tuesday, less than a year after a series of ruptures in a few hundred yards away on the same road. Staff from Southern Water and Hampshire Highways repaired the leak on Main Road, close to the premises of Winchester Caravans and Motorhomes. It was due to be fixed by yesterday lunchtime as the Chronicle went to press. However, 8 vehicles have responded to the emergency, and one contractor told the Chronicle the pipe burst was major. Last July, the company apologised after a mains water pipe burst twice in 3 days, causing significant flooding and loss of water to nearby homes. The incident is only around a mile from the chronic sewage pollution issue at Bramberge, where drains are unable to cope with heavy rainwater and are regularly discharging raw sewage into the River Itchen. Southern Water said supplies in the Colden Common area should be back to normal soon. The company tweeted, "We apologise to customers who have experienced low pressure, localised flooding or an interruption to supply in the Colden Common area due to a burst water pipe. We have teams on site. Supplies should be back to normal soon."
Thank you, Deborah. My piece is headed Scarecrow Trail Back for Half-Term Fun and Games. The Osbury Scarecrow Trail returns for the summer half-term, offering entertainment for all the family. Visitors to the hilltop village near Winchester will be able to follow the trail of more than 30 scarecrows from this Saturday, May the 27th, until Sunday, June the 4th. The straw characters depict favourite children's TV programmes through the decades and adorn the main roads in Osbury and the Glebe Field beside the church. The creations include popular current programmes together with favourites going back to the 1960s. The trail offers half-term fun with a chance to identify the films and enjoy a walk in the countryside and win a prize. This year's Osbury Scarecrow Trail offers free parking beside the church, a picnic area, family meals and refreshments at the Ship Inn, and Mr. Marucci's ice cream van. Scarecrow trails are on sale from 10 a.m. every day beside St Andrew's Church and cost £5. Richard, please.
Currys closes the only outlet. Winchester has lost its one and only Currys as the electrical store closes its doors for good. The branch in Winnall closed for the final time earlier this month as its lease at Unit 3 Eastern Lane came to an end. The nearest branch for Winchester residents is now more than 10 miles away in Hedge End. A spokesman from Currys said, "Our Winchester store will be closing on May the 13th as the lease comes to an end, and we continue our focus on retail park stores where we can offer our customers the widest possible range. We've had discussions with all colleagues and impacted by this decision, and they've been offered roles in our neighbouring stores." The closure sparked concerns over rent prices on social media, with even larger chains being outpriced. Before the store closed, a member of staff claimed that it would no longer be economically viable after the landlord increased the rent. The unit's been stripped of the purple Currys branding and it's unknown what, if any, business is expected to move in.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah?
Lecturer's strike over pay set to roll on. Staff at the University of Winchester will be striking throughout the exam period unless the Vice-Chancellor agrees to increase their pay. The university branch of the University and College Union, UCU, was hopeful that management would withdraw its threat to deduct 100% of pay for up to 2 months from staff taking part in the marking boycott. The pay dispute has affected all universities across the United Kingdom, but 92% of institutions have said they won't enforce full pay cuts. Following a meeting last Friday, May the 19th, Vice-Chancellor Sarah Greer has decided to push ahead with cutting pay from staff using industrial action. In response, union members took to the picket line on Wednesday, May the 24th. The union has also proposed further strikes on May the 30th and 31st and for most of June, unless the Vice-Chancellor changes her stance. Winchester UCU officer Gordon McKelvey said, "Everybody was so hopeful that our managers would see sense, but their refusal to do so has been a real shock and disappointment to our members. This has left us with no option but to go on strike. The whole situation is avoidable, and many other universities have shown there's no justification for deductions on this scale." The University of Winchester has been contacted for comment.
Thank you, Deborah. Now, the last item of news, and it's headed Cathedral Check Needs a Name. Winchester Cathedral has launched a competition to name the three-week-old peregrine chick hatched on its roof. Winnie's one and only chick emerged on April the 30th, but is still yet to be named. The young female peregrine is growing quickly, with a weight of 110 grams as of Friday, May the 19th morning. Cathedral is now asking the public to comment their name suggestions on its Facebook post, with the winning entry to be chosen at the end of next week. There is no limit on the number of times people can comment with different name ideas. Current contenders include Melusina, after Melusina Trench, Angel, Betty, after Elizabeth Montague, Willow and Geronimo. Keith Barton, chair of the Hampshire Ornithological Society, has inspected the chick this week and removed the other eggs that did not hatch. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. But before we go, just another reminder that if you have any problems with your recording, the contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And would you please put the memory stick and the address label inside the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Now, our thanks go to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And, of course, many thanks to my readers. Richard?
Goodbye.
Deborah?
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter, until next time, goodbye.